My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country.
Are you
today,
able to hear me?
We are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating, and the video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Well, folks, apologize for the little bit of break in our audio feed there. I had something I was going to pop in, and I just didn't get it fired, but that's all right. We're here now. Bottom of... not next hour, but the following hour, the final hour of the program, Dr. Carol Lieberman will be with us. We'll talk about the psychology of Hamas and what that looks like. So we'll get her insights with regards to that. Also today, Neil Bailey is back from his time that he spent in the Ukraine amongst the orphans and also in several of the superhuman hospitals, talking to wounded soldiers and so forth over there. So we're going to get an update from him and some of the stories that he has to share with regards to that. And so we'll have that for you coming up at the top of hour number two. We have been, as I believe much of the world has been, closely watching the horrors that have been coming out of, and the stories coming out of Israel, the continued fighting that is going on, and the Hamas threats. I want to quickly show you a video, and this is, let me see if my hard drive is going to cooperate here. It looks like it is. It's thinking about cooperating. Let's see. Let me grab that. What I thought was going to be a simple exercise. There we go. And bring it over where I can see it, because that's what's going to make it. Okay, here we go. This is Tel Aviv rush hour at 8:30 a.m. Just to give you an idea of the obviously very real impact on the people in Israel of this war. And I welcome now, I'm gonna get this together. I promise you, I am. I'm just not sure exactly if it's gonna happen in the next hour or so. Let's try that one more time so you can see it. You could hear a little bit, but not see. There we go. Now, it seemed like we heard David. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
We saw empty streets. We heard a couple of toots of horns from somewhere. Uh-huh. But normally that's downtown Tel Aviv. So that would be a thriving packed street of vehicles and people rushing to work and so on.
Thousands and thousands. It would be like those pictures we see or movies we see of New York during rush hour, with people scurrying and cars jammed up and blah, blah, blah. You wouldn't see cars jammed up there. That's a light rail. So the tram, so that's all for cars. But, I mean, you would see just more people than you could imagine. It seems like all of humanity would be converging in those streets. And it's a ghost town. It's a ghost town. Jerusalem's a ghost town. Where are the people? Well, many are at home, worried. The youth are all gone. Men and women are all gone. They're in the army, and they're on the borders, and there are many borders, and there's much tension. So there was 100% call up of reserves. 150% showed up. What do I mean by that? That basically when 100% call up is, they're calling up everybody who's fully capable, fully ready, and fully equipped, which is about age 40 and under. But 150% showed up, which means people who are like 40 to 50, 40 to 55, who were trained, and they still do their training every year. I mean, they're still trained soldiers.
Right.
But they showed up as well. So Israel now is basically over capacity, which is putting some stress on the logistics of it all and the supply chain of the military. But that's it's a good problem to have if you have too many soldiers out there. Sure. So Israel right now, we don't know how many are actually under arms. We do know the military did let through that they have 500,000 soldiers on the northern border alone. On the northern border alone. 500,000.
Wow.
Which is enormous for a country of 10 million. That means 5% of its population alone is on the northern border under arms. Every man, woman, and child. So, and then the south, where Hamas is and where the active, well, I'd say the active fighting is, but the north has also seen quite a bit of active fighting.
Okay.
Essentially, this country is in total war at this point. And the war hasn't, the fighting has begun to some extent. The devastating tragedy and catastrophe of the surprise attack happened, but the real war hasn't even started yet. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You have been in contact with me by WhatsApp pretty much all weekend long, letting me know things that are happening. You and I had a conversation actually on Friday, which I have not released yet. I mean, social media has seen it. I'll get it up on our Rumble channel so you can watch that, folks. But in our conversation, we talked about that they hit Nazareth and Galilee and that area, and that was from Gaza. Is that correct?
That was from Gaza, which is longer range than they've ever hit. They obviously said that they've hit north of Tel Aviv a little bit. If you sort of imagine Gaza's way in the south, they hit Tel Aviv's kind of center south. They hit north of Tel Aviv a little bit, but Nazareth is in the north.
Right.
You're talking about a missile that flew, about 150 miles, about 100 miles.
Right.
120 miles, which is a lot longer than the range that they've ever shot at Israel. It was shot down. The Israelis are ready for it. But what it means is that you see the missiles that can come in from Hamas reach like this, and the missiles coming in from Lebanon, which haven't quite started in a big way yet. We've had some trickles. Instead of it coming like this from Gaza and this from Lebanon, you're seeing this sort of thing. You see?
Right, right.
So it's overlapping ranges. So Israel's got his hands full now with missiles alone, let alone everything else that's happened.
Well, and there's several other things, and we're going to stick with this because I want us to try to cover as much possible ground as well as some background ground as possible as well. Let's continue talking about where we are right now, and then we can go back and talk about some of these other things. And I'd like to, kind of refute some of the things that are being put out as well. At least as it pertains to, going after Benjamin Netanyahu and some of those kinds of things. And there are some concerns about some of this messaging that are just plain not accurate. Talk to me about, you mentioned in the green room, a fire hose of information as far as what's going on. Is that looking forward, or is it the fact that we're getting more of an idea of what happened to answer some of the questions about the breakdown?
Really all of the above. There's obviously the information of what happened and information about the fate of people. For example, so-and-so calls and says, my cousin was among those that was killed. Funeral will be so-and-so. So you see, you have that. You have more information coming from sort of a newsy type information about what actually happened as far as we can put together. Numbers, statistics coming in. That's the past. The present is, where are you? Are you okay? Do you have what you need? Blah, blah, blah. What's the situation with supply chain? you know, the Israelis right now, because there's so many troops under, they didn't expect a war this big ever again. So they're lacking certain things like helmets and vests and knee pads and basic stuff, sights for guns and so forth. So, you know, getting a tremendous amount of information about this flight's coming in, needs to get through customs, military equipment, food equipment, T-shirts, blah, blah, blah for soldiers. So there's a tremendous amount of that going on. I mean, the Israeli military pretty much has what it needs, but there's really a supply chain coming in for all sorts of things, medical supplies, et cetera. Yeah. And then there's the future. What is Israel going to do? What needs to be done? What sort of thing? Where's America in this? What is Biden? What does Biden think? What is this? So you're really past, present, and future are all converging now. And the pace of all this is dramatically rising by the hour. You feel that the next step is about to start. And so the flow of information is just simply becoming overwhelming.
Some of the information that we, you know, you and I talked quite a bit a week ago Saturday about Israel's defense system, about how could there have been such a dramatic and significant breach without Israel responding. And you mentioned that, you know, you guys went for hours not knowing, I mean, hearing and being aware that there was, you know, the missile fire and things of that nature, but not knowing that there were terrorists on the ground in your cities near you, not so far away, and that they had pierced that exterior sense of security and the security fence.
Well, there's a lot of failures here, and one is a failure of conception on the highest level of some very rudimentary deterrence, the belief that people don't commit suicide. Organizations, nations, entities don't commit suicide. And what happened was a suicide attack of an entire organization. The entire organization threw itself at Israel. And the response will most likely be its absolute destruction. So you ask, why would that happen? And that's exactly what the Israelis didn't get. I unfortunately had to go to a funeral and then afterwards to the comforting. The Jews have a 7-day mourning period where their house is open, and you go to the house and you sit there and listen to the bereaved family members talk about the deceased person. And I sat with the wife of a commander a colonel who was killed in Reim base, a military base about 2 miles from the border. And she was there. Her husband was, it was a holiday, so they invited the families to come to the base and stay overnight and then go back in the morning. So she was there with her 3 small children when the attack happened. And the men and the women whose families were there, because Israel has women soldiers and men soldiers, the soldiers put all the civilians inside a keep, essentially, like you see in medieval times, a keep. And they fought to the death to save them. And they held out for 8 hours. And eventually the commando unit 669 came to extract them and extracted the civilians, including her and her 3 small children. She didn't even know at that point her husband is dead. But I talked with her about, and there were other at the funeral and at the thing, there were some of the other survivors, the few soldiers who survived as well. So I talked to some of the soldiers. I talked to her and I asked, didn't you know? I was very ginger. You don't want to start getting into that. But they wanted to talk. And the answer was, we saw. We knew something was going to happen. But we didn't think for a moment it was going to be that big. And that's the real surprise. Because that big meant suicide. It meant that Hamas decided that it was going to go for its own destruction as the ultimate result. And there was no intelligence estimate that said Hamas would do a terror attack on such a scale that it would necessitate its own destruction. So deterrence, the very assumption of the most rudimentary form of deterrence, that very assumption is what failed. And again, that was on a larger strategic failure, in a sense, the belief that Hamas was its own independent actor. Independent actor has no reason to commit suicide. Doesn't exist afterwards. But if the independent actor isn't, in fact, independent, but really is like a military unit of a larger entity, then you sacrifice. I mean, it's horrible to say, but you saw it. Anybody who saw the movie Dunkirk mm-hmm. or knows about the history of Dunkirk knows that the British willfully surrendered units nearby
right.
Dunkirk
to save the larger body,
to save the bulk in the center of Dunkirk.
Right.
Well, our enemies do that too, and they were willing to sacrifice, literally, essentially, send as a collective suicide bomber an entire organization in order to deliver for Iran a strategic victory. And it was that interpretation that ahead of time was not understood. So the Israeli military was expecting a terror attack of maybe even 100 mm-hmm. terrorists swarming across the border under the cover of missiles with anti-tank missiles, et cetera, et cetera. And that they might be able to even take partial control of one or two kibbutzes. And after, you know, but only for a little time, maybe a few minutes, half an hour.
Right.
They would suffer almost total casualties. The death toll on Israel's side may be 15 or 20. No, you know, a terrorist attack. What they faced was possibly as much as 5,000 or more. Terrorists.
Yeah.
Simultaneously
right.
swarming across the border, potentially having a cyber attack at the same time, using drones to knock out all the monitoring system, taking down the communication structures, the emergency communication structures of the military and the emergency services, and covering it with heavy barrage of missiles. So, yes, it's a surprise, and Israeli intelligence has a lot of explaining to do, as well as the people who think through strategic realities, which is more than just an intelligence question. They have an awful lot of explaining to do, and more than that, rethinking to do. It's a genuine surprise on a level the scale was never even imagined
now,
by anybody.
There is, and I sent you this, but there seems to be an understand or some information coming out that there was an infiltration of Israeli military intelligence hub by some Hamas gunmen. This detail says 10 Hamas gunmen with detailed knowledge of Israeli intelligence hub's location and layout infiltrated Israel on motorcycles after crossing into Israel. They traveled east and veered off-road to approach an unmanned gate at a military base. Armed with color-coded map, they located and unlocked the door to a fortified building, which led them to a room filled with computers. Under a bed in the room, they discovered two soldiers seeking shelter, whom they shot dead. This entire sequence was documented by a camera mounted on one of the attackers' heads.
Yeah, this is probably an outpost. I mean, it's not a central intelligence base, but, you know, I don't want to cross or give Hamas any more information than they have. But obviously,
right.
since they did take one base that's significant, that's where that lady's
the base you mentioned. And of course, we're not trying to give them any information, but I think that one of the things and the concern
That was a big base, unfortunately. And as I said, ultimately it held out at cost of nearly everybody there, but of the soldiers who were there, but it held out.
There was, let me see where that video ended up. I think... Hold on one second. So the part of the reason for bringing that particular piece up, I guess I can just play it off of where I sent it to you, David. Okay, so.
These guys not know.
All right, here we go. So part of that concern and bringing that up is in relationship to this conversation. This was a clip of an interview that was done by Charlie Kirk. So here, let me play this real quick.
These guys not know this was taking place.
So I've been to Israel many times. The whole country's a fortress. When I first heard this story, I still have the same gut instinct that I did initially. I find this very hard to believe. I've been to that Gaza border. You cannot go 10 feet without running into a 19-year-old with an AR-15 or an automatic machine gun that is an IDF soldier, right? The whole country is surveilled. And so let me just kind of go through this. We don't talk about Israeli politics very often, and most Americans don't know this. The last 9 months, Israel was on the brink of civil war. It's not an exaggeration. This judicial stuff, there were hundreds of thousands of Israelis taking to the streets because Bibi Netanyahu was basically redefining the Israeli constitution. That's not an exaggeration, right? He said the judicial branch has too much power. There were protests planned this week against Netanyahu where they anticipated tens of thousands of people to take to the streets. That's all gone, Patrick. Netanyahu now has an emergency government and a mandate to lead. I'm not willing.
So, you know, some of the implication of that, you know, is almost like, well, you know, this was allowed to happen, or this was, that somehow, and President Trump, not 3 or 4 days ago, called for the impeachment of Netanyahu. Bannon has said, oh, Netanyahu, and you and I talked about this, but Bannon said that Netanyahu turned his back on Trump, and so we shouldn't be fans of Bibi Netanyahu. We'll talk more about this. We got a whole nother hour. We're going to talk more about this and about, again, reiterating the conversations that we've had. But relative to what Charlie just said about the border, let's just hit that small piece based on what he was saying and what you said.
Well, okay, as far as the border, I mean, obviously it was a catastrophe, and obviously a lot of people got killed. At this point, the death toll stands at about 1,805, of which over two-thirds are civilians, and 200 missing, either dead and not located or captured. And taken back to Gaza by Hamas. So about 2,000 people are dead or gone right now. But that said, 75,000 people live within not too far a distance from the border. And they fought. And the military that was deployed fought. And they held them within about 3 to 5 kilometers. They never got in further than that. They did get one or two cells, one as far in as 25 kilometers on a motorcycle. But they only got in about 3 to 5 kilometers before they were stopped, and only about 12 hours before the Israeli army was back on the border, basically. So as big a catastrophe as it was, the fact is the Israeli army basically did hold the line. Yes, it slipped 2 to 3 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And in those 2 to 3 kilometers, every civilian was killed. And yes, many soldiers were killed defending that 2 or 3 kilometers. And therefrom comes the death toll. But to stop a surprise attack of that magnitude, and just 2 to 3 kilometers, 4 kilometers at most, actually suggests that the Israeli army didn't fall apart and it wasn't a complete breakdown. Now, as far as the other things concerned about everybody, every inch, there's somebody with a machine. Look, I mean, it was Sabbath morning. It was a holiday. The intelligence had estimated that the situation will be calm, more or less. I mean, they thought there might be a terrorist attack. There were plenty of soldiers for a terrorist attack. And that overall, on the larger scale, the Hamas wasn't in a suicidal mode. So there, the interpretation was there's enough there to handle it. There were a lot of soldiers, not obviously it turned out to be not quite enough, but a lot of soldiers. I'm not sure I fully understand what Charlie Kirk is getting at, whether he means the opposition was working to undermine Bibi, or Bibi did this intentionally to create a national unity domination or almost dictatorship. The truth of the matter is, politically, sadly, Prime Minister Netanyahu is finished. This is he will stay in power throughout the war. He will prosecute it. He may survive a few months afterwards, but he will take responsibility, and he will be held accountable for this catastrophe, as will the entire top military leadership, as will a lot of the chattering classes and larger defense establishments, civilians, retired, etc. Israel will go through a complete cleaning out of elites in the next half year to year, because this is a failure that was big enough that it certainly has many fathers from many stripes. And I don't believe Netanyahu will necessarily, I don't believe he'll survive it in that way. That said, so if he did this for political gain, this he would have known. He's a political mastermind. He's one of the smartest political, he's like Bill Clinton. Agree or disagree with Bill Clinton, he was a political mastermind. Mm-hmm. He and Dick Morris together. And Bibi's like that. He's a brilliant politician. And he would have known that a disaster like this, that would be his legacy. So there's no way he would do this intentionally. He would allow this intentionally. And as far as the opposition, neither had they the power to do that, number one. And number two, unfortunately for them, the kibbutzes on the border are secular. They're more socialist secular. It's their people. One of the biggest death tolls came from that peace party. Right. Nova Peace Festival. It was a rave festival, music festival. And almost 300 of its people were killed. So their people are the ones who were killed.
The opposition party, which is, and I think it's important, that's an important piece too that needs, because I've seen, people posting, Christians posting about, look what Israel does. And there was a Hindu God, and there were, obviously. Tell me about that, because I think it's important at some point for people to understand that what was happening there did not in any way represent Israel's, Sheriff Torah, right?
The Torah, yeah. Shomer Torah, preservation of the Torah. No,
right.
It didn't. I mean, this is like Burning Man representing Middle America. It's a free country. You can do what you want. You can worship Buddha and burn a bonfire and have little idols. It's a free country like America.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not where the majority of the country is. The majority of the country is either religious, respectful of religion, secular, and at least tolerant of religion. And then there's a small group that are pagan, basically, that, they're of Jewish origin, but they're here, and they consider themselves Jewish culturally. But so you have all sorts. And that festival was essentially a music festival for young people who, it's like Burning Man almost. And that's what was there. I mean, I question having a peace festival 2 kilometers from the Hamas border when you now see how liberal-minded, open-minded, progressive, LGBT-friendly, women-friendly Hamas really is. Having a peace festival like that on the border that was coordinated with the Arab. And by the way, one thing that's come out, Israel allows Arab workers from Gaza because they don't want to have a humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
Right.
So Arabs from Gaza work in Israel. Yeah. This peace festival employed a lot of Arabs, and it was done in coordination with Arabs, mm-hmm, as part of also peace. And it turns out a lot of these people were double agents. They were intelligence for Hamas. So when Hamas showed up at the gates of some of these kibbutzes and villages,
they let them right in.
They knew who they were, yep. And they didn't even see anything wrong with that. But and that's one of the reasons why the surprise was so great. They saw these. It's like opening a door for a robber who's about to kill you, but it turned out he was the gardener you'd hired for the last year. I mean, you'd open the door. You know who it is. And then all of a sudden he shoots you and kills you. So this peace festival, half the organizers were complicit with the invasion. The guards, the workers, construction workers in these towns, all these people that the Israelis let in as laborers and so forth, they're the ones who then showed up with guns. So, you know, you have to understand that level of surprise as well to understand what happened.
Right.
The peace festival, again, that was a lot of very naive-minded people.
Sadly, even in that clip, right, where that Charlie's speaking and the host, if they had a crew there, and it turns out that that the cameramen that are working are actually assassins and killers.
Correct.
And
some of the security guards.
Right. And so now, here they are, they're doing their shoot thinking, right? And then the next thing they know, they're dead. Because why? Well, what was the failure? Well, there really wasn't an assumed, there was, I guess, a background check failure of some sort, but the assumption is that the guys that were with you were with you. And the problem here is that was not the case as it relates to the people involved in this whole festival maybe was in part of the cover for allowing him in. Now, another piece to this that you and I talked about quite extensively was the opposition party instructing individuals who were part of the voluntary military, including, I remember you sharing with me, one story had to do with Netanyahu needed to go to a meeting, and the pilot that was supposed to fly his plane was a part of the opposition party and basically refused to fly the plane, would not take Netanyahu where he needed to go. And we talked about that was sending a very clear message to the enemies of Israel, who we again described Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, the border situation, the potential. We talked not 2 months ago about the potential of a three-pronged attack and war coming in. And we put the map up on the screen when we did it, folks. Go back and watch it. If you want to know, if you want to go back and see that those things, they're covered here on this program. If you were watching this program, honestly, Saturday would not have been as big of a surprise. Still a horror, but not really that great of a surprise. We predicted something to this magnitude happening, and we even talked about the fact that Israel was likely to be attacked on three borders.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And we talked about that the political, the opposition political parties actions of telling their members, don't show up for duty, don't show up for practice, don't participate, basically protest by not going, was weakening Israel's defenses and potentially sending a message to the enemy, hey, you're gonna have greater success than you might have otherwise, because those that should be defending Israel are sitting this one out in protest for their liberal globalist concepts.
Yeah, the truth is that there was a lot of hype before the war about the big reservist refusal to serve because of their opposition to the Prime Minister, Bibi Netanyahu. But the truth was that very few didn't serve. But Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran, Israel's enemies, took great heart from that. It gave him a great deal of confidence in that adrenaline that matters in war. It increases your morale, gives you the energy and confidence. So they took a look. They looked and they saw this. The truth was that, you know, Israel was, its reserves were showing up at pretty much 100% rate, call up all before this was happening, despite the calls for refusal. The draft, I believe there might have been 10, 20 Israelis that refused the draft in the last cycle of draft, which is, well, let's see now. In each cycle, Israel probably drafts somewhere around 50 to 70,000. So, you know, 10 or 20 at most out of 70,000. It's not a very big refusal rate. About normal, in fact, for Israel. That's any draft in the last 10, 15 years has been about that rate. So, but there was a great hype out there about how much damage the prime minister was doing by going ahead with the reform and how nobody was showing up for this and nobody was showing up for that. It was more of a threat and it was more of a hype. You have to understand, the anti-reform movement, the people who oppose, are run by some of the wealthiest, biggest PR firms in Israel. So those PR firms were beating the drums of this grave crisis in the reserves, which just really wasn't actually there. So Israel's army was basically at full strength of what it was mobilized to at that moment. But the image projected to Hezbollah and Hamas was certainly of the military falling to pieces. And that matters in war. Again, how your mental disposition entering a battle is 50%, 70% of the battle. So it had an effect, but it didn't actually reduce the ranks.
And I think the other piece was is that the greatest issue was in leadership, more so mm-hmm. than boots on the ground, because the opposition party had people in leadership positions that were not, you know, that were a part of the opposition party, that were not with the government that the people had chosen and selected. And so we talked about the impact of that.
The head of Israeli intelligence is the son-in-law of one of the big opposition leaders, of one of the big protest leaders. So, you know, his attitude is you know that the prime minister is damaging the country. But again, yes, politics is deeply involved. I think the prime minister felt somewhat besieged by all these protests and attacks and so forth. Very much like, you know, the conservatives in America often feel when they're in office, whether it's sure. DeSantis or Abbott or Bush or Trump, well, Bush less so, Trump, etc. You know, they feel besieged, and I think it wears them down and it takes away some of their energy and sharpness to pick up on a situation immediately and react. And you know, that might have been a factor as well, but by and large, the military has a lot to answer for, and a lot of the people high up in the military are part of the Israeli swamp.
Well, the other piece to this, and I'm glad for that perspective, because the other piece to this is, you know, Israel had a sense that we are impregnable.
Yeah.
That nobody on our side dies, period, end of story. So, you know, we're looking at 1,800 to 2,000, which is horrible, and the means by which, and all of that is all horrific. But on the broader scale, in a country of 10 million, whose width is, you know, 40 miles across, and whose length is, what is it, about 150 miles, something like that?
From top to bottom and somewhere around there, yeah.
You know, that is squeezed in between all of these countries. Yes, there's peace at the Egyptian border for the most part, but everywhere else, you know, you have tension everywhere else. They are surrounded, and even down near the Egypt, you've got the Gaza situation. So in light of all of that, you began with the Israeli people having a belief and projecting. And so the outside world, and Charlie was kind of talking about that to a degree, that we're impregnable. No, you know, nobody could even harm one hair on one head of one civilian. And as you mentioned, you know, with a suicide mindset, you know, I've been around, you know, security details and talked with those people, the best of the best, and they'll tell you, look, here at the end of the day, here's the bottom line. If the guy that is trying to do this is willing to die to do it, you have limited defense capabilities against that. Your best defense is the idea that the guy who's trying to kill the guy that you're protecting doesn't want to die doing it.
Correct.
And if he does, you know, that's a bad situation. That's a bad scenario. And so, yeah, and so that's what we have here is we have a people who were willing to commit suicide, but in light of their belief system. And I understand, yes, there's proxy pieces to this, and Iran and sacrificing, and so, but in reality, their mentality, I mean, that's why they go into marketplaces strapped with bombs and yell, yes, their yell, and then blow themselves up and everyone around them. The concept of them being suicide bomber vessels is really not that far-fetched for these people. Yes.
Well, the terrorists across the border, certainly every last one of them was willing to die. And there were drugs found in the cars, too, that helped them be kind of deluded and not fully of reasonable mind. But, you know, what you're seeing here is an organization that's willing to commit suicide for its cause.
Right.
And that's what was unimaginable to the Israelis, because you can't deter an organization like that. And now it's dawning on the Israelis, and that's the calculation. And we can get into all this about the Northern Front, Southern Front. There's a lot of debates in Israel about what to do right now, which, you know, could be happening as we speak. But there's a lot of debates right now about strategically what to do. And that's what's dawning on the Israelis, is that Hezbollah may well be in the same place. And all the interpretations about Hezbollah is being warned, it's being threatened. Even the United States is now threatening. And by the way, I think it would be a horrible idea if the United States directly intervened here, and I'll get into that too. For Israel's sake, it would be a horrible idea, let alone for America's. But at any rate, the point is, the Israelis now are suddenly beginning to realize, well, then everything they understood about Hezbollah in the north, in fact, everything they understood about Iran and potentially getting a nuclear bomb and maybe having a deterrent structure with them, it's out the window. You're dealing with people who are willing to die.
Right.
And how do you deter a nation that's willing to commit suicide? And then you have to take seriously, there was a president in Iran in the mid-2000s, Ahmadinejad. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, many of you probably remember him, a colorful character. And he said, if I sacrifice half of Iran to destroy Israel, I will do so. And everybody thought, oh, that's just typical Muslim, Iranian hyperbole, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
In light of this, you have to take that seriously as an operational consideration.
And that is a whole nother animal. I mean, that is really a whole nother animal. All right.
By the way, the United States must take this, because the complacency the Israelis have, and that was really the thing, the bugaboo that really bit them. America has it. we all have it in the West, whether it's Europe, whether it's South Korea and Japan. By the way, North Korea is very close friends with Iran.
Well, and I just put this up because to that end, okay, Laura Loomer has said, attention, Illinois, Islamic terror alert. Hamas is now in their chats talking about attacking Chicago, Illinois, where there's a large Hamas terror cell. Source tells me known lone wolves are preparing to attack Chicago. So, you know, I know that there was a lot of conversation over this past weekend about, you know, the potentiality of a terror attack, the day of terror that was spoken of for this past Friday. There were protests. There were, you know, those kind. There were a few pretty much non-major reported attacks, if you will, you know, people who were killed. If I'm not mistaken, I saw a couple of situations where there were Americans and there were people who were killed. I think no more than maybe a half dozen, which is still, and we need to not get numbed, by the way, to those numbers. You know, one life is one too many. But go, and I guess that brings me back too to what I was saying about Israel. Israel's concept was that again, we're impregnable. Nobody will ever, they'll never step across our border, and that as a goal is wonderful, but perhaps not necessarily realistic.
Correct. I mean, it wasn't realistic. They were complacent. They did not see both the extent of the evil, the level of suicidal capacity, the cruelty. They didn't expect the cruelty. And certainly didn't expect the commitment and the energy of this. So, but the West, again, do we?
No.
I mean, who have we let across our southern border?
Yeah.
I'm sure among them there are terrorists. There are maybe Chinese soldiers. I don't know, because there's a lot of Chinese military age men that are crossing the southern border.
David,
large numbers.
11 years ago, I was reporting with Texas Border Volunteers, and we had pictures that we were able to show of what are called rape trees. And these are trees where they hung the panties of the women that they raped down there.
Yeah.
And we would talk about such horror. And so many, I mean, the mainstream media wouldn't cover it. Commentators on mainstream media dismissed it as some kind of conspiracy theory to try to drum up border security or I don't know, whatever their shtick was at the time, but it was reality. Now there has been a story released about the babies and that these terrorists beheaded babies. And I saw not long after that was released, there was pushback. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that even with Bannon and them, that they suggested that may have been propaganda. I don't remember, but there were several outlets, conservative, you know, strong right conservative and liberal, both, that then retracted their stories or came back or said, no, it really didn't happen. That kind of war propaganda, and we know, right, David, that it did happen, that they actually did do this.
It did happen. The Israelis did bring journalists there. They have pictures. I know soldiers who were that were among those that were first on scene. One cannot imagine more than 80% of all the dead were tortured. Extensively tortured before they were killed. The 20% that weren't were the ones who fought to the death. The most horrific things you can imagine. The most horrific things. Babies were beheaded. We have full evidence of that. Babies were burned alive. Babies were shot. And then, you know, in ways that didn't kill them, and then shot to death. 90-year-olds, 95-year-olds, 85-year-olds were tortured and burned alive. Not most, but a lot of the victims were burned alive. We have videos. The thing is, it's not just Israelis and foreign journalists who are witness. Hamas was very proud of it.
Right.
They themselves took films of themselves doing this and very proudly put it on the internet. You don't need to be Israeli. You don't need to be pro-Israeli. You don't need to be a Western journalist. You don't need to be anything. All you need to do is listen to what Hamas said about what it did and showed itself doing. Yeah. So they themselves provided the evidence. Why? Because they're so sadistic that they get a rush from this. So for them to put these, and by the way, it's one of the things, I hate to say it, but it's one of the things that's causing a great morale boost in the Palestinian population in Gaza. They feel like they got those Jews. They got those heathens, those pagans, those non-Muslims, those infidels. They feel like the blood that they see is giving them sustenance in this holy war. And so the things that are horrifying us are actually motivating, which is why they're being posted. But you don't even need to list any Israeli or Westerner. The Palestinians themselves are putting it on.
Let's talk about that. Define, first of all, who is Hamas?
Who is Hamas? Hamas is an organization that is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. A religious, fully, you know, or it's a religious movement anchored to the Quran and the belief that the 200 to 300 year first generation of Islam was pure, and that therefore must be emulated to the last. So, if the Quran says you take your enemy and you cut his hands off, you take your enemy and you cut your hands off, or whatever, very literal. No interpretation, they're very cruel, and they're about 40,000 soldiers. So here was an organ. First of all, they sent 5,000 of the 40,000 across. 40,000 is the entire organization, including what's in Gaza. So, or 35,000. So that's who they are. They're part of the larger Muslim Brotherhood network that includes ISIS and Al Qaeda. And the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and we see it across the Middle East. They are Sunni, by and large, but they're working with Iran because Iran sees utility in working with these religious fundamentalist Sunnis. In the end, they would kill each other if those are the only two left on Earth.
What's their relationship to Palestine and the Palestinians? Why are they...
They don't believe in Palestine as a nation because they don't believe in nations.
Okay.
They believe in one universal rule of Islam without internal divisions. So they don't really care about Palestinian nationhood. They just believe this territory is the front line of the battle with the West. And they say so. They say that their objective is America will be destroyed. In England will be destroyed. They will be all made Muslim in the end. There was just a speech by one of the leaders 3 days ago saying this exact thing, that this was the first major victory in the march to destroy America and convert it to Islam. Their goal is us also. And by us, I mean America. I'm sitting here now in Jerusalem, so by us, I could mean both here. But it's America. They're after America in the end. And Israel is the front line for them. So they just had a major victory on their front line. And that's what I mean. They're part of a larger world. They don't see themselves as the begin-all and end-all of an organization. And therefore, they're willing to die, just like a suicide bomber is willing to die for his organization. this organization is willing to die for the larger movement of Islamic fundamentalism, jihadism.
What about Palestine? The Palestinians voted Hamas in, so they are the head of the government. There's two, as I understand it. There's Hamas and Fatah, both of which are Sharia, Islamic Sharia elements.
In the West, we always thought Arab nationalism is secular and these religious movements, Muslim Brotherhood, are religious. The truth is even Arab nationalism, Yasser Arafat himself, the Che Guevara pro-Soviet KGB agent, was actually part of the Muslim Brotherhood when he was young, and there were Muslim motifs in everything he did. It was really still Muslim identity, and specifically Sunni Muslim identity.
Okay.
Because the PLO, Yasser Arafat, the Palestine Liberation Organization, Fatah, they killed a lot of Shiites because they were Sunni Arabs. They killed a lot of non... but anyway, the point is, they're all really various shades of Islam. You have in Gaza, you have Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas comes from the Ikhwan al-Muslimia, which is literally the Muslim Brotherhood. And in the West Bank, which is Judea and Samaria, you have Fatah, which is the PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, headed by Abu Mazen, which, though at one point he actually said he doesn't support the methods used by the terrorists, he reversed himself a day later and said he does support the methods used, not only the attack and the victory, but the methods of cruelty. So they're not any better. And I think that's the other problem is, yes, Hamas was elected. You could argue they were elected a while ago. Maybe they don't still represent the Palestinians. But I don't see a lot, you know, until I see a lot of Palestinians abroad. I understand that there's a climate of terror inside Gaza that Hamas is imposing. And I have seen 6 months ago, 5 months ago, some people in Gaza rising up against Hamas because their homes were confiscated or their neighborhoods were being razed for a beautiful new mall for the rich elite, et cetera. So I saw some demonstrations against Hamas for that. But I got to tell you, outside of Hamas's grip in London, in Washington, in Chicago, I'm not seeing Palestinians getting out there and saying, this is not us. We do not agree with the methods that were used. We don't even agree with the attack. We want peace. We're willing to reach out to our Jewish comrades and try to reach an understanding that these are outside the pale of, these are outside the scope of civilization, and we condemn them. You don't see that. And until I see that, I don't know how to relate to the Palestinians at this point. When you had a Jewish terrorist, and I'll call him right out, a terrorist, Baruch Goldstein, right, in 1996, entered the mosque in Hebron and shot dead 29 people, worshipers. Everybody called him a terrorist. And their message was, good he was killed by the Palestinians. Good he was killed. Good riddance. He wasn't even given a proper burial. Nobody showed up. And the entire spectrum of Israeli politics, from far right to far left, said, this is not us. This is not our way. He is not among us. He's not one of us. I don't see any Palestinians saying that.
Well,
don't know how to relate to them.
So let me back up for just a minute, because there is also, you're talking about Palestinians, but I think that we have to be careful in how we speak about that in an identifying. Let me run through this. So this is something else too that you know, because they're, one of the things they talk about is as well, Israel is an occupier, they're an oppressor, they're okay. So let me give a little history. This I'm going to actually go ahead and put this information up on the screen. It was shared. I can't promise you its author, But this is showing a map of Israel, and you can see the inlet, which is what's called the West Bank on the right, and Gaza is this little strip on the left. But here's, so the land of Israel has been populated by the Jewish people since 2000 BC. Here's the timeline in case you didn't realize that it is their homeland as designated by Yahweh. 1900 BC, Abraham chosen by God as the father of the Jewish nation. 1900 BC, Isaac, Abraham's son, rules over Israel. 1850 BC, Jacob, son of Isaac, rules over Israel. 1400 BC, Moses leads the people out of Egypt and back to Israel. 1010 BC, King David unites the 12 tribes into one nation. 970 BC, King Solomon, son of David, builds the temple structure in Jerusalem. 930 BC, Israel is divided into two kingdoms, the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. 800 BC, the rise of the prophets, God's messengers. 722, kingdom of Israel is conquered by Assyrians. 605, kingdom Judah is conquered by Babylon. 586, Solomon's temple is destroyed by the Babylonians. 539, Persians conquer the Babylonians and take control of Israel. 538, the Jews return to Israel from exile. 520, the temple is rebuilt. 450 BC, reforms made by Ezra and Nehemiah. 433, Malachi is the end of the prophetic age. 432, the last group of Jews return from exile. 333, the Greeks conquer the Persian Empire. 323, the Egyptian and Syrian Empire take over Israel. 167 BC, Hasmoneans recapture Israel and the Jews are ruled independently. 70 BC, Romans conquer Israel. 20 BC, King Herod builds the third temple. 6 BC, Jesus Christ is born in Bethlehem. 70 AD, Romans destroy the temple. After that, the people were captives to the Romans, Byzantines, Arabs, and Crusaders. Through all of these events, the Jewish people continued to live in Israel. There were more or less of them, depending on the centuries, but there was never a time when the Jews didn't live in the land. They stayed. They built their communities. They raised their families, practiced their faith, and they suffered at the hands of many outside rulers, but they always kept their faith. It is what sustains them even now. In 1948, the UN established the State of Israel, the nation of Jews. Don't buy the Palestinian lies that they are entitled to the land. It simply is not true. Yahweh will also provide a way for his chosen people to live in Israel, as he has for thousands of years. Pray for the people of Israel.
Well, that's an accurate history, and we know it's accurate because it's written concurrently with the events. Everything you hear about Palestinian history and the denial of Jewish history has been written since 1964.
And it should be noted, as a matter of fact, where is it? Where do I have that CD? Oh, there
it's the KGB. The KGB created the Palestine Liberation Organization, and it was part of the overall Soviet strategy against the West.
If you get this, General Pacheco's disinformation, you can either get the book or you can, you know, as I like to do, you can watch the DVD. But if you watch this, you will hear him. He specifically talks about them choosing Yasser Arafat, training Yasser Arafat, funding Yasser Arafat, and then sending him over because communists have to destroy God, period. There can't be God or spirituality in the world that is in opposition to them, and it's why they're after Israel and America.
Absolutely. They have to destroy God, and one of the strategies of the KGB in destroying the West as a whole was they saw what worked in Algeria with the Front Liberation Nationale, the FLN, which threw out the French, and in Vietnam, which threw out the French as well. Mm-hmm. In other words, they saw the power of the anti-colonial movement. So they realized that's how they're going to have to attack the Americans in the Middle East. The only problem was there was no colony in the Middle East.
Right.
Israel was not a colony. They were the indigenous people. So what did they do? The KGB literally invented an indigenous people. The Palestinians as some ancient civilization that has no history at all. And the Jews suddenly became white colonialists, even though, you know, we're Red Sea pedestrians. There's no doubt about it. That whether you take my DNA or whether you follow my family chain or you see what I worship, you know, there's no doubt where we come from.
Right.
And there's a contiguous history and concurrent history written in every period that we have that tells us where the Jews are and what they did. And we know that this is not invented recently. We have 2,000 years of texts and eyewitnesses that wrote down what the Jews were doing for those 2,000 years. So we know we're the same people.
And it should again be, you know, clearly understood as we look at this and as we consider, and let me, hang on a minute. Let me put that. So when you look at this map, in particular of what is identified as, you know, as Israel, the West Bank, they gave that away in a compromised negotiation in an, in an attempt to try to appease their enemies, in the same way that they gave away this strip that is called Gaza. You know, again, this would be like, this would be like America succeeding Texas back to Mexico. I mean, literally, that's essentially what it would be. It would be,
Mexico would openly be advocating for the extermination of the Americans.
Right. The people who live in Texas. Yeah. Kill all the Texans and murder the people that are living there, because they're occupiers.
And then use it as the launching pad to murder all the rest.
Yep. To invade the country.
Yeah. So that's, you know, and so Israel gave up Gaza and it became just one huge terrorist base. So that's who the Palestinians are. And now the interesting thing is there were Arabs. They were called Arabs, Palestinian Arabs, because the area was called, the geographic area was Palestine, which was, there's actually a more technical name, Palestinian Syriana, you know, et cetera. It was a geographic area that the Romans named, and we can talk about where the name Palestinian comes from.
Sure, go ahead.
It does not. It's not because of an ancient people. It comes from the Greek. We see already Herodotus and other Greeks referring to this area as Palestine in 400 BC, and it wasn't because the Philistines, which I know it sounds a lot the same, but the P and the PH are not the same in Hebrew, and there's other things. The S is not the right S for a foreign people. What it is that what the Palestinians, what Palestine was named by the Romans, the Greeks had a consistently named people, named areas and the peoples after the way they named themselves translated into Greek. So, for example, England would be whatever the Greek word for ing is, and land would be the Greek word for land. So where does Palestine come from? Well, you got to go, what does Israel mean? Israel literally means Israel, comes from Jacob, who struggled with God. So Israel means to wrestle, and El is God. So it's the wrestler with God. So what's the Greek word for wrestler? Palestis. That's Palestinian. So literally, Palestine is the translation into ancient Greek, literally, of the word Israel. It almost confirms the Israelite existence. Why did the Romans call it Palestine? Because the big fight with the Romans wasn't just between the Romans and the Jews. It was about revolting Jews against Hellenizing Jews. Jews who said we should stop worshiping God, we should assimilate into Greek civilization as a whole.
Right, right.
So to punish those who revolted against the Greeks and the Romans and those who were Greekifying, they decided to just, you know, really with a big in-your-face move, call the remainder of the area by its Greek name to support the Jews who were against, who were against the revolt. So, you know, that's where the name Palestine comes from.
And so what we need to understand then is that there is no such thing as a separate Palestinian people, because the reality is that that based on what the Greeks were saying, based on what the Romans were saying, based on what the history says, Palestine was just another name in a different language that identified Israel. And it was kind of a slang, if you will, in an effort to validate a group that was rejecting God's traditional role. You got sirens?
I'm not sure it's here. Just a second. I'm checking.
Go. All right. Let's remember, David is in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, they're in sirens. I'm actually, Tel Aviv is under attack, but I'm in Jerusalem. I'll leave it on, but I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay. All right, we're going to take our break, and Tel Aviv is under attack. Please, 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 Father, we pray protection right now in the name of Jesus Christ. We pray protection over David's location. We pray protection over Jerusalem. We pray protection over Tel Aviv. We pray, Father God, for protection over all of Israel right now. We ask that not only will the systems of defense work there, but Lord, also that the attacking systems will fail. And we ask, God, also that the that those that are attempting to use ground attacks against Israel and against the Jewish people will also come to naught and fail. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ of Nazareth, the came in the flesh, I just speak against this attack and this assault right now in the name of Jesus Christ. We're going to take a break. Keep praying.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Hey, this is Pastor Greg. I just want to take a minute to walk you through how to sign up at CGR Wellness. So you're going to type in www.cgrwellness.com. And that is going to take you over here. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to come over here and you are going to, we're going to shrink this down so it doesn't get in our way. You're going to go right over here to create account. and it is going to offer you the opportunity to create an account. You've got to type in an email address. So we're going to type in an email address. Be good if I put a good one in there, right? There we go. And now, there is a window that pops up. Now, when this window pops up, here's what you need to do. You need to just X out. Just close that window. Okay? Just close that window. Now we go over here, and we'll use a strong password. And then we'll put in our name. And we'll put in our last name. And then we'll put in an address. And the city. And we'll choose our state. And we don't need a phone number. And it wants us to make sure that we're not a robot, so we'll do that. Wow. And we'll create the account. And now the account's been created. Now, there is a share code. I don't remember what it is right now, but it doesn't really matter. Now you'd go over here and type in Vibe. It's your first product you're looking for. And there is the fruit and veggies, superfood liquid multivitamin. Click on that. And you're going to order, I recommend that you order two, and I'll tell you why. If you order two of them and add those to the cart, now here comes the cart. Now, you're going to get your second bottle for half off when you type in Chosen Gen Radio. Chosen Gen Radio, and click apply. And that's going to give you $20 off. Plus, you're going to unlock free shipping. So and now welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio. Order, and David is back with us. So there was, tell my audience what you were sharing with me about what exactly took place there.
Well, right. You heard. I leaned over and I thought I heard the sirens. I'm kind of in a very quiet room here. The door is open right now. You may hear people talking out there, but anyway, the door was closed. It's a very quiet room and the windows are closed. Because there was an angry birder earlier and he was just making a lot of noise. I just didn't want him to bother us. Anyway, so I heard the siren, but the sirens in Israel are very precise. You can be 500 yards away and there's a siren for that neighborhood, but not for yours, because they judge very precisely where that missile's coming down.
Okay.
So you can hear sirens all the time, but not yours. So I didn't know if it was our siren or not. So I opened the door and said, is it ours? And they said, it's ours. So we ran down to the basement. I don't know if you heard from the moment that I don't know if you guys were still on the air, but from the moment I left – to the booms. There were booms. There were about five distinct booms. It was only, 45, 50 seconds, something like that. It was very quick. That's all you have. From the moment the sirens start, you have maximum 90 seconds to get into your bunker.
And that depends on how close you are.
That's in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Obviously, if you're in Beersheba, you have less. You have 60 seconds max. And if you're in Ashkelon or Ashdod or so forth, you have 15 seconds, which is nothing.
Right. And that's just because of proximity. There, I mean, if there, yeah, you're that close to the
correct
to where they're launching from.
Right.
Now these were likely launched from Gaza.
I think they were launched from Gaza. I haven't verified it. I mean, the Israeli military knows exactly where they came from.
Right.
I'm assuming they came from Gaza. Because the warning, actually, for Lebanon, I believe we're in the 122nd envelope for Lebanon. So we have almost 2 minutes to get into the shelter. And this was obviously quicker than that. So okay. I think they came from Gaza, yeah.
Okay. And this has been continual, by the way, right? I mean,
this is my second one today. Every day there's three or four at least. Again, I'm mostly in Tel Aviv right now. I'm just in a bunch of meetings here in Jerusalem. So this is my first in Jerusalem, but this is my first day in Jerusalem since it started. So, yeah, every day to three or four, but it'll pick up. It'll pick up once the war really starts, meaning when Israel goes in actually on the ground.
Is there an expectation about that?
Yeah, everybody assumes that that's what the next step is. Everybody assumes that should have happened already. I can't tell you how thick the anticipation is of that. It's one of the reasons why the pace is picking up of everything, of information and so on and so forth. But I think the Israelis, whether it's the government still deciding on its options, whether it does the north first and then Gaza, or Gaza first and then Hezbollah, whatever, or whether it's just simply not ready, or whether it's all psychological warfare so that Hamas begins to think that Israel maybe isn't going to go in on the ground, and therefore the Israelis, I don't know what it is that's causing this delay, but I'll tell you, being here, I'd rather just get it underway,
right?
And know what's coming, because right now it's like I don't know how many of your listeners ski, but when you get to the top of the steep slope, you can either sit there and think about it, and you're going to psych yourself out, and then go to the bunny slope, or you can just do it. And the moment you're on the slope, you're too busy going down to think about it anymore.
Right.
It's the same with war, just with a lot more grisly details.
No doubt. No doubt. Okay, we're near the end of our time together here, but just as we close, what message do we need? Because there's, you know, we're hearing now, we've got the Pope has said, oh, he'll negotiate a peace, a compromise, another compromise. Okay. Respond to those.
Not only Israel, but the West, the United States, and all of Israel's peace partners in the region are being judged by what will happen here. Right now, after Saturday, Israel looks weak. The West looks weak. The Arab countries that made peace with Israel are wondering whether they made peace with the strong horse and wondering whether their hides are not on the line now, too. It's imperative for Israel to emerge from this with a stunning strategic victory. And I add a strategic victory delivered by itself, not right, with American assistance. It has to show that it is strong, that this was an aberration, and those who came after it will pay a devastating, traumatic price. And by that, I don't just mean Hamas in Gaza, but this came from Tehran. In the end, they have to be the ones who are on the strategic retreat. They're the ones who have to visibly and tangibly be showing fear and retreat. And ceasefires now, all those things are simply attempts to steal the victory of the West's and Israel's enemies. And this is not the time for ceasefires. This is the time for victory. Okay. And the other message is to Americans, our enemies are on the move. They feel the West is complacent, has lost its way, is torn apart internally. They've contributed to tearing us apart internally. Wake up. This is coming for all of us in the end.
It's so important, I think, that folks also understand that Hamas and ISIS, this is one and the same, okay? The name may have changed, but the goal, the objective, the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the West, the absolute, total, and complete annihilation that ISIS was about and that they were carrying out, is the exact same mission that Hamas is on right now. And as you said, David, if Israel has to send this, I know that we have SEAL team that is ramping up, or I'm told, relative to rescuing our hostages in Gaza. That's not interfering with Israel. That is America stepping up and being America for its people. Let's not get confused. Let's not get confused.
And even if Israel needs some air defense, you know, defending civilians, but Israel needs to fight this war on its own, and it has to prove to the world that it's a strong country.
Yeah.
It can only do that alone.
Yeah. And again, the...
That's why Americans like Israel.
Yeah.
Well, because we see in Israel a little America who's independent and fights for itself.
And again, that prayer that I shared, the spiritual warfare prayer for Israel, I just encourage folks to go and locate that on our Rumble channel. And our prayer points: praying for protection, strategy, unity in Israel, destruction of the darkness, and confusion in the enemy's camp, both within Israel and without. Still critical prayer points that we need to be on top of. David, thank you for being with me for all this time today. I greatly appreciate it. We'll continue to follow what's going on. I'm going to take the break at the top of the hour. Neil Bailey will be talking with us here shortly. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming up right after this.